Well, hello, it's season 5, and we are super excited that you are here as we dig into one of my favorite subjects. This season, we will be chatting with some amazingly smart and influential people in and around the arts and entertainment industry about something I like to call the inner critic. Who is this mean voice that constantly tries to stop us? And how do we confront it and kick it out of our way? From therapists to deliverance ministers to fashion icons and entrepreneurial geniuses, we are going to talk about that inner voice that wants to stop our creative passions and hinder our ability to shift culture. Head on over to my website, lindseymorgan.co, and use the promo code LOVE for 50% off the Crushing Your Inner Critic Masterclass. And now, let's get to that conversation with this week's incredible guests about their journey with the inner critic.
So excited, as usual, about my guest today. This is my friend, Michelle Lang. Michelle is a video and online marketing expert, and she's the founder of a company, which she's going to tell us a little more about here in a minute, called Visible Impact. So Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lindsay. It's awesome being here.
I'm so thankful for you taking time. You're such an amazing person and you have so much going on, so many good things that we're going to share with the audience soon. But I'd love to just start out and hear more about what is Visible Impact. Tell us more about what you do, because I know it's amazing and you've helped me a ton. So share with our audience if you wouldn't mind.
Thank you. So we work with impact-driven entrepreneurs, creators, coaches, and consultants, really anybody who's running a business, and we help them build their platform to build their visibility through video, a lot of online content and online launches. We work with a lot of people also that have digital products, whether it's a coaching program or some piece of interactive experience online and also offline, right? A lot of times there's an online offline component, right? Coaching and training online, you know, in-person live events, things like that. And that involves a lot of growing your audience, really finding your voice, finding a way to express it and get it out there, and finding a way to share your message in a way that's going to impact and resonate with your audience. So we're building their business from the ground up, but the focus first is really helping them get visible and put their message out there, because in order to sell your products and services, you need an audience. And you need an audience that becomes raving fans. So we help you create those raving fans.
Yeah. Wow. That's so amazing. And I mean, this is why I wanted to have you on the show, because I would say when we first get on camera or first allow our voice to be heard, the inner critic is like beaking at our, right? It's like knocking at our door. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, that's so amazing. And I'd love to hear, like, how did you get into this? Because I know you have a history and you've done some cool stuff in your life. So share with us just kind of what led you into doing what you're doing now.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I feel it came full circle. So when I was growing up, I was always doing theater for fun as a kid. And I did some professional theater in the local area. And I later was very involved in theater in college. And so I transferred to NYU Tisch School of the Arts. I thought I wanted to be an actress and singer on Broadway. And that was the path I was on. But I hit this real roadblock around my own visibility. And it was interesting because I never had those issues growing up. It was suddenly when I was in college with some of the best, most talented people I'd ever been around. I mean, some of these people had done Broadway at age 13. Suddenly, you know, I developed this belief that I wasn't good enough and went through years and years and years of hiding. And, wow. You know, it manifested through perfectionism and I'll do it when I'm ready, you know, all of that. So anyway, we can talk about that more later, but cut to 10 years after school, I decided, you know what, I'm more comfortable on the other side of the camera. That's my safe zone. So I moved out to Hollywood thinking I wanted to go down the path of being a feature film producer. So I took all those jobs you do to pay your dues. I was an assistant at a big talent lit agency. I was a development girl for some A-list directors and actors. And about 7 years into that, I had the realization that while I love the creative work, I mean, I absolutely love working with the creatives, the writers, the artists, the set designers, the politics and the business of movie making was not my thing. And as a producer, you gotta do both. It's really both, and you gotta love both, right? So, or at least not even if you don't love it, you have to be willing to do both. So I left that to go into the coaching field. And then through a series of coincidences and divine incidences, I was given a mentor who showed me the world of video for entrepreneurs. And then things came full circle because when I was sitting in this, she invited me to a class she was giving with another person who really specialized in that area. And I remember I was sitting in the class and I had this light bulb moment of like, wow, this incorporates all the pieces that I love, the writing, the directing, the messaging, the coaching, the helping other people go on camera, creating. So it just was like this perfect blend. And it's funny when you find what you love, often you look back on all these things you did before and you realize that they really were all building blocks to give you what you needed to be ready for that thing you now evolve into. It's pretty fun and cool.
That's amazing. And, you know, I know we were going to try this and it didn't work this time, but I've talked about you on the past episodes. I've actually talked about you because when I saw you on Instagram talk about the inner Karen and you had the hilarious, like, I don't know what it was, a filter on. I mean, I was laughing so hard. I'm like, this is perfect. So I felt like even your acting was coming back, you know, maybe even that acting was coming back.
Well, it's so interesting that you say that because I've talked to some people that have prophetic gifts and out of two different people, I heard like, I'm getting that you need to bring the actress back into your work. And I started doing that and I've started having so much more fun and started engaging a lot more people in different ways through playing these different characters. And, you know, when I talk to entrepreneurs, I say to them, you know, look, I get it. If you don't have an acting background, that's hard to just get up and do. But right. The takeaway I tell them is the more you can get yourself, you know, I really have this belief that where a lot of fun is, it's really hard for fear to exist. It's almost like the fun, if you can get into that zone of play, the fear, it starts overshadowing the fear. Your focus, all the adrenaline's going and you're focused on the play. And so what I tell them is like, try to tap into something that's really fun for you before you go on camera, whether it's dancing around the room or talking to one of your best friends, like anything that gets you in that happy zone is going to raise your energy, raise your endorphins and put you more in a place of fun where you're probably going to do your best work because you're relaxed and you're in the flow and you're being you.
Wow. That's so good. I love that. Where fun exists, fear cannot exist or like has trouble existing. That's like really
good. Yeah.
That needs to be one of your Brené Brown quotes,
quotes, you know? How about this? Where fun exists, fear cannot persist.
Ooh, girl.
Yeah, I know we don't have the Snapchat filter today, but I could definitely do like a 30-second soundbite of Karen when we talk about the inner critic.
Girl.
Yeah, she's alive. Karen lives in everyone, even men. It's just maybe Ken, but yes, Karen lives, that's why honestly, I really believe the reason that Mem took off is everybody believes deep inside that there's a little bit of a Karen in them. And I'm not talking about the racist Karen.
Sure.
It's the self-judgment around, God, I know sometimes I have to complain to a manager or yes, I have had to ask my neighbor to turn the music down. Like, right. We all have that part of us. That's like, oh, I feel like such a dork. And you know, so the Karen and the Ken show up differently for people. But yeah, it's that part of you that you want to disown because it's kind of,
I love that though. I mean, when I saw you do that, oh my gosh, it was so funny. And I was like, that's it. Like, I wouldn't say that, like, as I teach about the inner critic, which, you know, like, I wouldn't say that the inner Karen is the inner critic, but the inner Karen is like kind of part of the like conglomerate of the inner critic. You know what I mean? So
she's a personification. And, you know, as a weird aside on that path from Hollywood to becoming a coach, I stopped off for a year in San Francisco because I thought I wanted to be a therapist. So I spent a year in grad school and therapy school, and my specialization was drama therapy. So it was using drama as a therapeutic tool. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I learned was, number one, the transformative power of art and the transformative power of play. Because if you can, you know, they say in acting, acting is being in imaginary circumstances. So if you're having a challenge and you're having trouble accessing some part of yourself, whether it's the confident you or the courage to speak up to somebody or whatever that is, and you can go into imaginary circumstances in an improv class or a role play with the best friend and act it out. Wow. You are then, I mean, they've literally clinically studied this. You can, you are so much more able to do it in real life. So the Karen thing, what she really is she's just an externalization of that thing, that inner critic, you know? And so, I don't know, I just think it'd be funny, like if someone's struggling with the inner critic, give it a name, give it a persona, dialogue with it, tell it off, whatever you need to do to get it up and outside of yourself. Right? That's called externalization. It's actually a therapeutic tool, believe it or not.
Oh, I love that. It's
pretty random, right?
I was learning new things. Like, that's so cool. Gosh, that's amazing. That sounds super fun. You know, I've had friends that have, and they've been on the podcast, but they've done improv and they said like the improv was like really healing to them. You know what I mean? It really helped them like let go of control and you know what I mean? And so I am such a believer in all like the arts and like healing. And I mean, that's kind of, you know, some of my jam. I love creative people and I love healing. I'm like, give me some therapy, give me some creative people. Like, let's have fun, you know? So that's really, really cool. I love that. That's amazing. So yeah, let's talk about the inner critic, shall we? it's my fave. So, I mean, tell me, are there times where you've like, yeah, I mean, it sounds like it from what you were telling us, like in your early 20s, you know, you had that thought of like, you're not good enough. Look at all these other people. They're better than you. I mean, to me, that is the inner critic. Like that's the inner critic's voice trying to hold you back from doing something that like, you're, you know, God probably has gifted you to do. Do you have any like stories of where, and I know I'm kind of throwing this off the cuff, so you can be like, okay. But do you have any stories of like where the inner critic really tried to stop you and how you're able to like,
so many, because I was dealing with the inner critic from like, as young as I can remember. Right. So people that have a very activated inner critic from as young as they can remember, it usually has to do with some type of family dynamic, parental relationship, sibling relationship, right? So we won't go into all the causes, but from the earliest early age. And so I noticed that my inner critic was very circumstantial, right? So when I was in an environment where I felt really safe, really loved, really appreciated, the inner critic wouldn't come out. So for example, I was, sounds so dorky, but I was like super active in this Girl Scout troop in fifth and sixth grade because my best friend, who was also a total theater geek, was in it too. And we did all their shows. We were like their two little star performers. So it was fun for us. Like we performed every week, everybody watched our shows. It was like a big part of that. Right. So I didn't feel any fear there, but then there would be other, and I felt it. I remember feeling it a lot in life, but not on stage. So for me as a kid, theater was like that place where I felt safe and where I could shine and where I felt loved and accepted. And that also, and summer camp was where I felt loved and accepted. So the inner critic didn't kick in. But I do remember more the inner critic kicking in like in junior high during that awkward phase. And I know, and I definitely remember it definitely in college at NYU. I mean, that's when it was in high gear. It was so off the charts, Lindsay, that I transferred there from University of Michigan. Okay. Where I was like an English and theater major. Then when I was like, okay, I want to go into this as a career, I transferred to NYU. Let me just say, it was so bad that when I was 20, I was like, I have to deal with this. Like I can't, it was hard to even move through school with it. So I decided to take a year off. And I remember writing in my journal, the only way, because New York City was a lot rougher back then. And I wrote, the only way I'm going to be able to survive in New York City and have a theater career is I have to find out who God is. Like I knew I wasn't brought up with any religion, but I was like, this world in this New York and this theater scene, and then all the inner stuff I was confronting was so difficult that I was like, there has to be a higher power to get me through this. And that actually what started my journey that year that led me to the beliefs I have now, right? So So the inner critic, though, and I, you know, everything happens for a reason, but it really definitely took, I would say, like a solid 9 years to get to this other side of the inner critic. Nine years in the trenches in New York, still getting up every day and acting, still going to master classes, but the battle was just fought every day with that critic. And I remember one day, one of my acting teachers said, so here was sort of the cycle. You know, I'm in class with all these amazing people, so I developed the belief I'm not good enough. Sure. The more I believed I wasn't good enough, the more I'm in my head while I'm trying to do a scene. Now, for anybody who studies acting, when you're told you're in your head, that's like taboo. You never, ever, ever want to be in your head. It means you're not being in the moment. You're not connected. You're not feeling it. You're not emotionally available, and you're not acting well. You can't act well when you're in your head. So when you hear an actor go, oh, I'm so in my head, that's like, that's saying like, it sucked, okay? And I remember one teacher said to me, and this, I still remember this years later, he goes, you know, Michelle, it's like there's three different people here in the scene. There's you, there's your scene partner, and there's this little judge right here watching you. And he's like, I can see it. I can see it in your work. It's like, I can see you like listening to it and then self-monitoring, right? And so the inner critic is the death of freedom. It's the death of self-acceptance. And it's the death of the power of love that you actually need to have for yourself.
Exactly.
To be able to do great work. And that's not just as an actor, it's in anything. You know, if a child, right? We know that if you don't hold a child, or if a child doesn't receive some kind of like skin to skin contact in a certain number of days, it will die.
Yeah.
That's how I think of it for the artist, for the creator, for the entrepreneur. If that being is not creating in a place of love, and meaning if they don't have it for themselves, at least they're getting it from their environment, or they're working on it. But if they don't have, people do not have support, they will not survive. And that's why you see a lot of really creative genius people self-destruct. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that they're not getting it from their community. They are, right? Everybody loves, if I named all the actors that overdosed, everybody loved them.
Yeah, totally.
It was from here.
Yeah.
Right? It's an inside job. And if you don't have that, any career will be the most excruciating career of your life. And I'll tell you why, because you're going to make mistakes every day.
Yeah, exactly.
Every day. I make mistakes every day in my business.
Right.
Five things go wrong in my business that are, some of them not even inside my control. A funnel link wasn't working, or someone on my team didn't do testing on a funnel, or whatever that is. If I beat myself up over every little thing like that, I would not have a business.
Exactly.
So success requires this container of enough self-love that you can hold the space to be human. And if you've got that critic like riding on your shoulders, you are carrying an extra 30 pounds of weight that you don't have to carry. And that's the end of my sermon. I just say it with passion, because for me, it breaks my heart. Like if I think about if I could talk to my 20-year-old self, I would have said, forget all those things you're busy doing. Forget the acting classes, forget making rent, forget the waitressing jobs, forget the temping and the job at the law firm and your friends and going out. Just focus on one thing. And if you do this one thing right, if you just focus on this for a year or even 2 years or 3 years, your life will take off beyond your wildest imagination. It would have been healing the inner critic.
Wow.
It would have, because that will set you, it will set you free.
Yeah.
And Christ said the truth will set you free. Well, let's connect the dots here. Part of the truth is that you are an absolutely loved child of God. Three words, loved child, God. All right. So if you're not living in that truth, you're living in a big fat lie that's going to suck a lot of your energy.
Yep.
Sorry. I just get really passionate about this because it is life-changing. It really is. I know, you know, from your own work with clients, it's life-changing when you change that belief.
And it's like you said, I mean, it was a 9-year process. It was a 10-year process for me. Like why I think I am passionate about like helping people kind of skip through a lot of those years and just get right to the breakthrough, because it was excruciating for me too, you know, just like constantly not feeling pretty enough, like not feeling good enough, you know, like not, that wasn't perfect. And that's part of why on this podcast, I love, like I tell every guest, like I told you, like, this is not perfect. Like there's no, we're not looking for perfectionism or like performance here. Like if I ask you a question, you don't want to answer it. You just say like, hey, Lindsay, like that's classified, you know? So, and I think that's kind of what I'm, you know, what I really desire to help people do is like break out of that so they can do what God's called them to do, you know? And because the enemy is going to come against whatever God's called us to do. So it doesn't surprise me that he comes in with this mean voice, whether he uses our own ouchies, I call them, right? Our own little ouchies that happen throughout life to all of us, whether the enemy uses those or he straight up is the father of lies, the Bible says. He is the father of lies. So he is going to straight up from hell lie to us. You know, he's either going to bring those thoughts to us or he's going to kind of use an ouchie that's already in there to just like throw us off. So I love what you said, girl. Keep preaching. That is so good.
Thank you. You know, there's one thing that I do want to say though, this healing and the progress comes in layers. And so I think, or at least I see in my own life, I will have a moment where the inner critic kicks in. Sure. It might be after I go live where it's really a logistical thing. I watch it and I really don't like what was happening on that live, right? Like I interviewed a guy on my platform and I was talking way too much, right? That's an objective fact. And it did bug me and I felt embarrassed about it, but you start managing it in a different way, right? Because I'm not living in that space of the inner critic all the time, when it comes up, I can go, ugh, I'm feeling kind of yucky right now. Let me get a reality check. And I ping my business partner and I have her get on the phone. I go, hey, will you watch this and tell me if that rubbed you as like an ick? And she's like, no, you were chatty, but it wasn't a big deal, right? So a lot of times we exaggerate. We are our own worst critics. So I think when those feelings come up, two things can happen. One is you can get a reality check. Two is you get to a place where you go, you know what? This is not how I normally feel. So I must be either really hungry or really tired or hormonal. I'm just going to like go to sleep and step away from this and see if I feel different tomorrow. And if you feel, and usually once you've healed that, you feel better the next day. It's not ailing you. And so I think that's the difference is we're human. We're all going to have moments of self-consciousness where we didn't like how an interview went or how a performance went, or we have a conversation with a team member and we look back and go, God, I wish I had handled that differently, or in a relationship. That's normal. But like they say, it's not what happens, it's how you deal with what happens. The difference is when you heal the inner critic, you don't beat yourself up over those moments. You just say as like in a space of love, like, wow, that was interesting. I'm going to do better next time. I'm going to shift that. Yeah. And then you do it. There's none of that baggage of self-recrimination layered on top of it. And one last thing, the reason this is so important is that if you can get rid of all that, then learning becomes fun. Then being a beginner at something becomes fun. You know, you work with a lot of clients and I do too, that have that same thing around, you know, beating themselves up, putting themselves out there. It becomes so much easier to put yourself out there when you know that if you fall on your face, you're not going to have to go through a whipping session with yourself.
Right.
So, you know, then you're healthy enough to take risks and let yourself make some mistakes. And just like you would with a kid you love, like you pick them up, you get the dirt off of them, you go get back on the bike. It's a totally different experience.
Yeah. It's so true, Michelle. And I mean, even like last week on the podcast, I tried this new thing, right? I was like, I'm just going to try it. You know, I had this video already and it totally didn't work. And in the past, what would have happened is that I would have been like so distracted the whole interview, you know, because I would have been like hearing that, you know, hearing that mean voice be like, you're such an idiot. I can't believe you screwed that up. Da, 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 da. But because I've worked so hard on my inner critic and crushing it, you know, I was able to just be like, no big deal, you know, like moving on, and then just able to like then continue on with the interview and not wreck the whole thing because I made one mistake, which was kind of a bigger mistake that I cared to make. But, you know, instead of beating myself up about it, I was able to kind of let it go and move on, you know? And so,
I love that. And that's so important for what you do, where like your audience, it probably wasn't even as big of a deal to them. Like I've had technology fail on lives where like everything's frozen. I've had to get back on. People are way, this is another thing about the inner critic. People are way more forgiving and more gracious towards us than we often are towards ourselves, right?
Because yeah. Stakes are relatable, right? They're like, yeah. Oh, cool. She's not perfect. I don't have to be perfect. You know, it kind of gives permission. Like you're like, oh, okay. Like she's like me, you know, like she makes mistakes. I make mistakes. It, yeah, you're right. It does. There is something to that for sure.
Yeah. Lindsay, it's funny. There's a content strategist that I'm working with for our launch. And she told me that, and she showed me the picture. She said her social post that is engaged the most of every post on her Facebook profile is one where she's completely sweating. Like she's, and I saw it, she's literally dripping with sweat and she's just like talking straight to camera about something vulnerable, right? Because yeah. I like to say our audience craves connection, not perfection.
Yeah.
You know, they want to be able to see themselves in you and they're not perfect. So if you're perfect, they're going to be like, that person's not going to get me, or they'll be intimidated.
Right, right. Or just jealous. And why would we want to create jealousy in ourselves by watching someone who's perfect, wishing you were like them? Like, it just doesn't make any, doesn't make any sense, but I couldn't get over it for the longest time, you know, especially the, like, you're so ugly or you're a loser. That was one of the voices I heard. You're such a loser, Lindsay. I mean, constantly for like years. And then you're right. At one point I was just like, what does loser even mean? Like, it doesn't even make sense. What do you mean I'm a loser? You know, or like, you're not beautiful. You're not pretty. You know, even though, you know, I teach people how to talk to God and, you know, God would tell me constantly, you're beautiful, Lindsay, you're beautiful. But then that other voice was like, you're so ugly. You're so ugly. You know, you're not pretty enough. And finally I was like, pretty enough for what? Right. For you. Like, it's almost like sometimes you have to question it. Like, right. Not even logical, you know, like, what are you talking about? And it took me years to like, even learn how to question it, you know? And, but once so you start questioning it, you're like, you're not even freaking logical, you know? Right. But yeah.
That would be a funny video. Like if you could do a split screen where like you're arguing with your inner critic on the other side.
Okay, guys, beware. That's coming out. Okay.
That's coming next. We're going to create it. Yeah,
exactly. But it is true. It's just sometimes when I think, because I don't know about you, almost called you Karen, Michelle. I don't know.
I'm ready to be Karen.
Well, I don't know about you, but for me, it would be like a stream of the same thing. You know what I mean? So it'd be like, you're such a loser. You're such a loser for so long, you know, and just like, what? Like it wasn't even creative because the enemy's not creative and obviously our ouchie's uncreative. So it would just be the similar kind of thread or narrative, you know. It was super weird. I don't know, girl, but I don't know. How do you experience it? I mean, do you remember any of the like phrases it would say to you? I call it an it.
Gosh, I don't. I'm gonna have to think about it. I think the main thread was really feeling I sucked at acting. And here was the irony. During that time, I did suck at acting. I truly sucked because I couldn't relax. I couldn't be me. I couldn't be the actor I used to be before I went to NYU. Mm-hmm. So it was true. I mean, that's the challenge. It was true that my acting wasn't strong and I knew it, but there were all these other things layered on top of it that weren't true, that were creating the belief that then made the acting not being good true.
So true.
But yeah, a lot of it, by the way, so I was the youngest in class because I was in like when I took the year off, I did kind of like a postgraduate program that mostly people who were out of college and entering the professional world. It was a professional actor, you know, class for professional actors. So I was the youngest. And I remember my acting teacher called me little one because I was probably like 105 pounds. I was 5'1". I was tiny. I was like 5 to 7 years younger than most people. So it was like little lies. Like you're just like this little mouse, you know, you're not pretty enough. Which I think every actor goes through. But even in New York, it's interesting. There's a lot less emphasis on having to be drop dead beautiful.
Okay.
You can be a character actor, but there is still this unspoken thing where the beautiful woman in the acting class is going to get, there's a elevation of beauty, right? That's, it's a value in the acting world. So yeah, there's a lot of that going on.
So interesting.
And then I remember when in NYU, I never wore makeup and I always had my hair in a ponytail because I was going through my little rebellion thing of like, that stuff doesn't matter. It's who I am on the inside. And I remember when I would bother to do my hair and makeup and go to class, it was very rare. There'd have to be like something going on. I remember everybody in class would treat me differently. And I remember one time our acting teacher, she was on Broadway at the time, and she even like, in the middle of class was like, Michelle, you look so beautiful. And I remember it, this is funny, it actually pissed me off.
Yeah, right.
Because I was like, why should you be treating me like this? Is the very reason I'm not doing this right now, because I am not going to be defined, you know, by my looks. And so I think we deal with that, these, because we're talking about a duality here. We're talking about, and this is actually important, a lot of the inner critic does have to do with external expectations of who we should be that we then internalize.
Yeah.
Really. Remember how I said my inner critic was circumstantial when I was in Girl Scouts or I was at summer camp and everybody loved and accepted me just as I was. I didn't feel the inner critic.
Right.
The inner critic got internalized as soon as I was plunked into an environment where it wasn't okay to be who I was. And then that got internalized as a belief system. Yep. You're not okay. Yep. Right. So I think it's important to note, because if you're ever in an environment where your inner critic's just getting kicked off right and left, and it doesn't normally,
right,
you got to look at two different things. Is it really your stuff getting activated? And if yes, that's a blessing, because God or the universe has brought you in a place where now you can look at it.
Right.
Or are you truly just in the wrong environment, in the wrong tribe? And being in there is not good for your soul, because it's activating these messages that you wouldn't otherwise, because you're actually picking up on other people's thoughts and feelings about you, right? So you've really got to sort sift through that, and you've got to have discernment.
Yeah, yeah. Amen, girl. And I mean, you know, that's exactly what I teach in my class, is I teach like, you know, learning to discern the different voices, where are they coming from, or different thoughts. I know when I say voices, people are like,
yeah,
what are you talking about? But you know, the different thoughts, like discerning some thoughts, almost putting them in buckets. And then any of the things that aren't, you know, a healthy us or aren't God, like take those thoughts to God, ask him what he thinks about it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, what do you think? You know, I feel like a loser, God. I feel like a loser. And you know, he would say, like, I mean, he's the one that said to me, What do you feel like a loser about, Lindsay? You know, help me question the inner critic, you know, or like, beautiful for who? Like what, you know, like, just like a very kind dad, you know, we've talked about that, like that he's Papa God. I mean, scripture is very clear that he adopted us and wants us to call him Abba, wants us to call him dad and father. And so like, you know, like we don't have children, but I mean, I think you probably have nieces and nephews, or I'm not sure. I'm assuming I have nieces, you know, like I would want to help them like work through that, you know, if I knew there were thoughts going through their head. And because God knew, you know, we all would need a perfect father, because it's just not a thing on earth. There's no such perfect person. He does that with us. You know what I mean? He wants to talk things through with us and help us discern, like, is this a healthy thought? Is this not a healthy thought? What do you think about this, God? How do you see me? And it kind of walks us into our identity with him and how he sees us. And I think that's how he sees us, in general, like how he sees all of his children. But I also think he knows how he knit Michelle together in her mother's womb. He knows how he knit Lindsay together in her mother's womb. And he wants to help us see how he created us. And he wants to know that we are loved for that person, whether the people all love us or not, because we know not everyone's going to love us, you know? And I think sometimes, you know, as creatives, we can kind of maybe, that's why things get vulnerable. Right before I published my book, it was scary because I was afraid people weren't going to like it. And I felt the Lord say, some people won't, but do it anyway. You know, it's okay. Not about pleasing all the people. We're never going to please all the people. But as long as we're in conversation with Father and he tells us, do it anyway, this is who you are, good job, you know, then it's like, well, you know, whatever the people say is what the people say. And that's painful, but it's true, you know.
It's so interesting. You know, there's a saying we say in the entrepreneur circle of like, even Oprah has haters. So when you get your first hater, it's a sign that you're starting to arrive. So I remember I was doing an online launch with my business partner about a year ago, and somebody got into our chat room. And I think it was that we were live streaming, but we were also live streaming from Zoom. So we posted the link onto our business page and in our Facebook groups that people wanted to join the chat room, they could. Now, since our business page was open to the public, some troll got it, clicked in. So you log in with your names, and this just said iPhone 4. And he just said, I won't say the words, but fat a-hole, typed it in the chat like 20 times in the public chat that all of our participants were on. So I thought about this, and I got this inspiration from another friend's post, and I screenshotted it, and I beeped out like the words at and the F and the a-hole, and I changed it to like the F and then Foxy awesomeness. And I put like a black like screenshot of text over it. And I was like, you know, like it's all how you perceive it and what you turn it into, right? Yeah,
that's right.
And I think, yeah, it's just, yeah. So I think that when you get those haters, you've just arrived. But also there's another thought leader, James Wedmore. And what he says is, the people that judge you are usually not the people you're trying to reach anyway. You know what I mean? They're hurt, scared people that probably aren't there even, they're probably not even out there doing what you're doing, or they wouldn't be sitting there saying these cruel words because they know how hard it is.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
But usually those people, those haters, are usually just very angry, upset, very sad people. So the only thing you can do is just kind of like bless them and kiss them off.
Yeah. Well, and that's so good. And the truth is, what I've kind of noticed is like, when I was hard on myself, then I was hard on other people. So it's like, inner critic is actually like, we can't give away what we don't have. So if we're mean to ourselves, if we don't love ourselves, it's going to be very hard for us to love others. If we're hard on ourselves, we're probably going to be hard on others, you know? So it's like, those people probably need it worse. But I remember, well, it's still up, but like I have like 34 reviews for my book on Amazon, and they're all like 5 stars, super good. And I have one like star review, you know? And so I think I've arrived, Michelle, because I have my first critic.
Yay, you have. You've got to screenshot that and post it and like turn it into chicken salad. Yeah. You know, back to what you're saying about the scripting method. I've done your scripting method, written a few sessions with you, and I do think it's so powerful. So if any of you haven't experienced it, find a way to experience it. It's super powerful as far as teasing out all those voices so that you can really get to the voice of truth, like both your authentic voice, that's who you are apart from all that stuff. Now, and then also hearing right from God. And it's super, super powerful. So yeah, it's important. Very important work in the process of getting rid of the inner critic.
I know. It's kind of like you were saying, like the fun, where fun exists, fear cannot persist.
Yeah.
For me, and I haven't thought about this till just this moment, so this is like live information, but for me, it's like, you know, in the scripting method, I teach people how to really hear God's loving voice, like hear the love of the Father, you know? And so it's like where love is, it's almost like the critic can't exist. You know, so it's like learning to hear from the voice of love, which is God. God is love, the Bible says, and then learning to like internalize that love for ourselves and let ourselves love ourselves. It does it. It starts to like push the critic out. And in my life and personally, it turned my inner critic into an inner encourager.
Ooh, I love that. Yeah.
I know. It's really fun. And I've noticed like I have like really, you know, very tangible examples of this. Like, I think it was probably 7 years. I just moved to LA. And for those of you that don't live in LA, you know you're welcome to the city when you get a parking ticket. So like, you know, these parking signs, you need a PhD to read the parking signs sometimes in some cities. And I was in Culver City and I had gotten a parking ticket and I guess I didn't get it. And so they sent me this thing in the mail and it was, I was going to need to pay like all this money. And I mean, the inner critic was so mean. It was like, I can't believe you did this. You're such an idiot. There are kids starving in the world and here you are wasting money. I mean, it was so mean. And I remember like crying and almost get it. It was like a physical attack. It felt like it was so intense. It was weird. And I mean, it, you know, it was this whole thing I had to work through, so much stress on the body. I mean, just not good. Right. And then recently, pretty recently, where I have even less resource than I had back then, I had plenty of money back then. I got a ticket and I just was like, it's okay. Like, I just could tell the difference in the way I treated myself that I was like, no biggie. You know what I mean? Like, yes, it'd be okay. And I thought, dang, like that is a major shift from like the way I used to just berate myself, you know? And yes, then way I'm just kind of like, oh, you know, it's okay, Lens. I'm just like, wow, that's a miracle, to be honest with you. So yeah.
And you know what's so interesting of what you said? It's so when the inner critic goes away, because like you said, you let enough love in to actually heal it, to heal your belief about it. And instead of look at it with condemnation, you can look at it from a place of love. So a lot of these personality things you may have had in the past that you may have been critical of are like, I'll speak for myself. Like, I'm still quirky. I'm still like, my voice hasn't changed. My appearance, yes, I'm a little older than I was, but I still have the same nose, eyes, mouth, lips. None of that hasn't changed. Yes, my acting abilities have improved, but there's so many, there are pieces of life that are going to be with you your whole life. Mm-hmm. You've got strengths and you've got weaknesses. So what's interesting when you heal the inner critic is those things haven't gone away. You just begin to view them so much differently. Mm-hmm. You know, and you start taking the focus off of what you're not good at and sinking your attention into what you are great at.
Right.
And, you know, they say where your focus goes, energy flows, right? That's mm-hmm. where you start putting your energy. You start shifting your energy on what you're paying attention to.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so good. You're right. Because we're going to be, yeah, I mean, I'm very creative. And so sometimes I forget things, you know, and so like, it's like, it happens. But instead of like, just beating myself up, I was just like, oh, it happens. You know, it was like, I mean, there's been a lot of things like that. But it's really amazing. I thought this is a miracle, you know, because I was like, I went from like the inner critic to the inner encourager, like where I would encourage myself. Like, I just thought that was amazing. So
I love that. I love that. I love that, that little like meme, the, from the inner critic to the inner encourager.
I know, God is so kind. Well, I want to hear, I know you've got a cool workshop coming up and I love sharing with my guests, like all the cool things that this are going on with my guests. I love to share that with my listeners. So it's a, I don't want to mess it up, but it's a visual storytelling workshop. Will you tell us more about it? Cause
it's a free live 5-day workshop, but it's 1 hour a day. So
okay,
on your lunch break from 1 to 2 PM Pacific time, December 6th through the 10th, we're doing a free live workshop called Video Story Selling Secrets. So this is for any type of impact driven entrepreneur, coach, creator, consultant, artist who wants to learn how to get on camera and share their story and really be able to connect with the whole goal is to help you connect with the hearts and minds of your audience. So to really understand how do you reach that connection point, right? So here you are with all your experience and everything you do or might offer as a business owner. And here is your audience. And unless you speak their language, your marketing is going to be like this, right? You're going to speak and they're going to go here and you're going to wonder why no one's engaging with your posts or your videos that you work so hard for. So it's really to help you. The end goal of it is to help you attract, engage, and convert your ideal clients or your ideal audience, right? So if you're an actor that wants to get an agent or a casting director on board, you need these skills. Same with if you're selling a digital product or service or a coaching program or, you know, pens, right? It's all the same marketing skill of sharing your message. So I'm taking everything I learned being in the trenches in Hollywood, working at some of the big studios, all the things that really help capture the attention of an audience, capture their hearts and minds. And then how do you take your audience on you with a, on a journey with you, so that later on when you make an offer, it's not icky because you've already created that connection and rapport. It's like a guy that you've gone out with on 5 dates with going, hey, want to go out on a 6th date? Instead right. of a guy walking up to you who you don't know going, hey, want to come home with me? Right. So it's building those connection points that create that relationship with your audience. So they're leaning in, they become loyal fans, and they want to be part of whatever you're doing. So yeah, video story selling secrets.
Oh, that's amazing. And that's starting what, next Monday?
Next Monday. Okay. Yes.
Wow. Great
time. So you'll want to register. We're going live. We're streaming live into our Facebook group.
Okay.
But you want to make sure you click on the link that you'll be posting in the comments and in the show notes, because when you register, this is really cool, we assign you your own personal coach.
Oh, nice.
And they will be your coach throughout the whole workshop. So any questions you have, any feedback you want on your messaging, we're going to give you little action steps to take every day. So by the end of it, you'll know how to tell your brand story, and you'll know how to, you'll have started creating your first video to start attracting in that audience. But creating the video is optional. You don't have to, but there's some awesome prizes we're giving away, picking people from those who make a video to get some really awesome prizes.
Wow, that sounds so amazing. Okay, so I'm gonna put that in the show notes on the podcast, and then I'll link it above this video as well. So definitely, if you've ever had any interest in like stepping out of the lies of the inner critic, that you aren't good enough or that you can't do blah, 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 like I think this would be a great step, honestly, to like get in front of a camera, become visible, stop hiding behind all the stuff that we all hide behind, and like go for it. Why not? Right? Like we got to live our lives. So I love that, Michelle. That sounds amazing. I might be joining you. Well, I'm going to be a tech darn.
Oh, well, you know, so here's a little secret that I'll let your audience in on. So the main workshop, right, is December 6th through 10th, and the replays will be up, but only for a few days.
Okay.
So you want to catch it.
Yeah.
But from December 11th through 14th, we're also going live every day with bonus trainings. And one of them, which you would love, that I'm pretty sure I have to double check, but I think it's Saturday, the 11th, that one's gonna be all around mindset. It's mastering the inner game of visibility. So we're gonna be talking about how to kick that inner critic to the curb, particularly when you're trying to go on camera, which is when that inner critic goes into high, high gear, usually for everyone.
Yes, for everyone.
Yeah. So if you can't be on one, maybe you could pop in, catch some replays at night. We'll be streaming watch parties at night too. So if you miss it during the day, you can join a watch party.
Okay, cool. So what they'll do is they'll click on the link. It'll take them to a registration. They'll sign up with their email, and then they'll get the information they need. Is that the simplicity of it?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, this is exciting. Oh my gosh, Michelle, thank you so much. Well, wait, before you go, I need you to maybe do a little inner Karen for us.
Okay, so let me think, because it's so funny. Usually I do Karen with the filter.
I know. We tried to do the filter for you guys.
You want to ask the Karen a question? Maybe that will give me a something to speak to.
What should be the, I wish I could have audience feedback right now. What should be
I do have a video of Karen. Maybe I could play with my, that's a tough one to do her in a vacuum. I'll tell you what. If I do a video of Karen in the, can we link to it in the show notes?
Totally. Let's do that. That'll be so fun.
Yes. That will give me some time because we'll figure out an angle and some kind of tip that Karen can do.
I love it. I love it. It's so funny. Or just go to your Instagram, because isn't Karen still on your Instagram?
Yeah, there is. I think Karen's still on my Instagram, or like there's a little video. Maybe we'll link to a little interview with Karen. Basically, what Karen does for a living is she goes to every school board meeting just to raise hell, just for the fun of it. So she feels a sense of control, you know?
Right, exactly. So you think the inner Karen is like just trying to get control? Do you think that's what she's doing? Or
she's truly what, you know, you call a Karen. Karen, well, it's interesting. Karen is the inner critic, but she's also part of what makes Karen difficult is she's very mean and exacting. and thinks that her way is the way and nothing else is valid. And that's kind of what the inner critic is telling you. It's like, there's one way to be.
Yeah.
Let's look at the inner critic for women. There's one weight you need to be. There's a way your hair should look. Yeah. There's a height you should be. There's a way you should be dating. There's a type of guy you should be dating. There's, you know, you're supposed to have this amount of money or these types of clothes. These are all another voice. So yeah. I was giving that voice a persona.
I know, it was so funny. I was like, yeah.
Here's the secret. No one wants to be around Karen. No one can stand Karen. Karen can't even stand Karen. So that's another reason we got to tell the Karen to go to the curb. Kick her off.
You have to kick the Karen to
I heard this from a coach. You give the inner critic a job to do. So the inner critic can, if it's not from some other realm, it can often be your subconscious mind trying to keep you safe. So when the inner Karen or the inner critic starts kicking high to gear, one tip I heard is to go, you know, thank you. I appreciate you looking out for me, but I've got this. Now, I've got a garage that needs some cleaning out. Can you please go get started on that? Like, you literally give it a task to go and do so it will leave you alone. And I thought that was so funny.
So many tips on overcoming the inner Karen and the inner critic. I love it. It's so good. That is,
and like, you got to give her the worst task. Like that one thing you never wanted to. My gutters need cleaning out. Can you get on that ladder?
Be mean to her right back because she's mean to us.
Well, but wait, that's true. You got to stand up to the inner Karen.
Yeah, which will help you stand up to other people. That's really true, actually. And I think that's what started happening in my life was like, pretty enough for who? You know what I mean?
Right.
Ask a question like, you're not pretty enough. You're not pretty. Pretty enough for who? Pretty enough for what? What are you talking
compared
about?
To what?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, what? What are we like? And I just realized, like, this thing is so illogical. It's driving me crazy, you know? So, oh my gosh, that is so good. That is so good. Well, Michelle, I'm going to put you on the spot, but would you pray for our guests or our.
Oh my gosh, yes. Do I do it right on this podcast?
Just right on the podcast,
do
girl.
Do I keep my eyes open or close, or is this just no way?
You'll be 100% you, girl. 100% you. Jesus loves you just the way you are.
Father God in heaven, I just lift up everybody in this audience. And I just pray that anybody who's listening, even if there's still like you've conquered most of that inner critic, but there's still like a little seed in there that you want to get out. I just pray for healing. I pray that all the little inner Karens and critics, tens and critics living inside people, I pray that you'll create circumstances in each person's life that bring that inner critic to life, so that each of us will be able to look at it, deal with it, tell it who's boss, and heal it on new levels. So God, I pray that where that critic exists, your love will begin to come in and really create a transformation, a redemption, a glorification, and a renewal. And I pray that those who are listening that are struggling with the inner critic, that you will move individually in each of their lives in the most specific, personalized way, that they will know that it's you watching over them. And I pray that you will cause each event to occur that's so unique to them that will be able to help them shift it so that they truly can have the fun and the joy and the freedom and the creativity that awaits them on the other side. And I pray all these things in God's name. Amen.
Amen. Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Michelle. I keep wanting to call you Karen.
It's okay. Yeah, I accept her. She's here, but she's over there.
100% Michelle. 100% Michelle.
Oh, Fresnel. Fresnel.
Fresnel. Who's that?
My combined name, like Cruella, like Karen and Michelle. Carnell.
You are 100% Michelle. No Karen.
Carnell. Okay.
Hilarious. Yeah. When you're having a bad day, you might be like, okay, Cornell, you need to head on.
Cruella. Cruella Carnell. Such a bad name.
Oh my gosh, you are so cute. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. I know you're blessed by this, and we will see you next week. See you later.
See you later. Bye.
Well, well, well. Wasn't that interesting? We can't wait until next week. Don't forget to grab Crushing Your Inner Critic Masterclass at lindseymorgan.co and use the promo code LOVE to get 50% off. This was recorded at New Vine Music in Santa Monica, California. We would like to thank Leonardo Antinori for producing this track. To learn more about them or to license original music for your next project, go to newvinemusic.com.